Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. I will post a link below this interview to that website. Now, John, look, we talk about the precious metals a lot. You write about the precious metals a lot, and we look at the market, and they're up a little bit today. But again, gold is trying to climb its way back to 1800. Silver's right around the $24 region, a little bit under that right now. Today, we are actually seeing some of the base metals correct a little bit, but those have done a fair bit better, quite a bit better, at least recently, than precious metals. And John, I know everybody's just looking around saying, what's going to drive the precious metals? I've heard for years that money printing from governments should drive the metals higher. I've heard that inflation should drive metals higher and low interest rates. These are some of the main drivers that we keep on hearing about. And we are in an environment where we do have generally low interest rates, still almost historically low interest rates. Inflation has spiked up, but again, the whole assumption is that, at least right now, that it could just be transitory. And governments keep on printing money, especially the Fed. The Fed has just kept on putting out money, but again, they haven't really changed their policy, so I guess that hasn't been that exciting for the gold sector or the precious metals sector. What's on your radar here, John? What do you think should be driving gold higher?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Well, you know, it's kind of a truism of life that you can behave badly for a really long time before the consequences finally come back to bite you. You know, for instance, you could live your life by maxing out one credit card after another and appear rich to your neighbors, but eventually go bankrupt in the space of like a year. And the global financial system is kind of in that place right now where we've been just borrowing insane amounts of money and creating insane amounts of leverage otherwise, and getting away with it. And yeah, we've gotten away with it a lot longer than we should have been able to. You know, this shouldn't be happening according to any, you know, common sense measure of what is financially possible. But it has, you know, and which means it's hard to call an end to it time-wise, because if it's gone along, you know, if it's gone further than it should be able to go, then you can't really pick the end. But one scenario where we could reach an end to the fiat currency experiment would be if the inflation that we're seeing now continues. In other words, it becomes not transitory, but a permanent part of the financial system, and people start acting accordingly. And that's so that kind of takes us back to the 1970s, which is the last time we had that kind of a situation where people actually thought, oh my God, inflation is going to be with us forever. You know, and what we saw back then was spiking interest rates and surging inflation and extreme financial volatility and political and geopolitical volatility. So we're seeing a lot of that now. You know, a lot of the 1970s are kind of repeating themselves here, and let that continue just a little while longer. And then you get an environment that's really hospitable for something like precious metals, any kind of a hedge against uncertainty and volatility and inflation would be suddenly a lot more attractive than it is. So I think that it's completely possible that we're heading into a time in which it's just accepted that, you know, the world is a really unstable place. Inflation is just the new normal, and you want to own gold and silver to protect yourself against it. So as boring as the last few years have been, they could be that exciting in the next few years going forward.
Yeah, John, I was over the weekend, I listened to a 1 hour video with Danielle DiMartino Booth, and she was making the exact same point you just did, that that we're getting into more of a 1970s stagflation environment. We've kind of discussed this before on the show. And a lot of people kind of push back on that and say, yeah, but like, look, they're really, gold hasn't been a good inflation hedge. Look at the last, but they usually are using the goal markers of look at the last 10 years or look at the last 20 years. But we really haven't seen inflation in the CPI government metrics to the degree that we're seeing it now. So sometimes that's kind of a false argument, and they're not really going back and looking from 1971, 1973 to present. So what do you make of the argument that when people say, yeah, but gold really hasn't been a good inflation hedge, and they're also used to continuous growth? You know, in the 80s and 90s, it's pretty good. We had a little dip at the dot-com bubble, and then we had a big period of growth for the last 12 years that was forced liquid, you know, from all the liquidation from the Fed and the marketplace. So they haven't seen a period of slowing growth and consistent sticky inflation yet, like the 70s. So what do you say to the argument that it's really not that great of an inflation hedge and hasn't been?
Well, I think if you zoom far enough out to encompass the 1970s to the present. In other words, from the time that we cut gold loose from the last vestiges of the Bretton Woods slash gold standard, gold was like $35 US an ounce back then. Now it's almost $1,800 an ounce. And in the same time, the purchasing power of the dollar has plunged. So gold has done exactly what it was supposed to do. You know, if you replaced your dollars with gold back then, in other words, if you shifted from fiat currency into sound money as your cash, that cash balance would be worth a lot more today in gold than it would be if you'd left it in dollars, which is what gold is supposed to do. You know, it's not supposed to be exciting. It's only exciting in really scary, crazy times. The rest of the time, which is the vast majority of human history, it holds its purchasing power. It's a rock that just sits there and stays valuable in terms of the stuff it can buy over long periods of time. So there's a place for that in every reasonable portfolio. There's also a place for aggressive stuff too, like tech stocks or maybe cryptos as they're currently configured. And there's not really a contradiction there. You know, a reasonable portfolio would own a lot of those different things, but the cash portion, especially in a period when we've, you know, gone to fiat currencies and are inflating those currencies away as aggressively as possible, the cash portion of your portfolio ought to be in real money. And the guys who did that, the guys who replaced their dollars with gold and silver, are in pretty good shape right now. So I mean, it's been boring lately in gold for sure, but and that's a problem for someone like me who craves action, but it shouldn't be a problem for anybody who is looking to preserve capital, because gold has done exactly what it should be. So in that sense, it is an inflation hedge. You know, the dollar has lost purchasing power year after year after year, and gold has gone up in dollar terms during that time, which is the definition of an inflation hedge. So I don't see any problem with the behavior of gold and silver in today's markets. I think the exciting part probably is coming again. You know, every couple of decades, we have a really exciting 2 or 3 year stretch for precious metals when people get spooked by the financial excesses of the world, and then they pile into real assets for protection. We're probably coming back to something like that again. You know, another version of 2007 to 2011 or so, only on a much bigger scale, because the numbers are much bigger now. You know, we're in much worse shape, believe it or not, now than we were in 2007. And I think the financial markets will reflect that fragility in the not too distant future.
So, John, what about the argument that gold just had a good about 3 years, 2018 through 2020, 2 years, went up from, let's say, 1160 the whole way up to 2100, even go back to 2015, tail end of 2015, that's when gold was under 1100, and then it went up. So it did have a good run there. But I think we need to outline the difference between using gold as a wealth protection type of investment and actually using it as an investment where people are out there making money, because we have a lot of people that tune into our site, and I know your site too, that are out there investing in gold because they want to make money, not because they just want to maintain their purchasing power. They see an opportunity to make money. These are very different concepts in the sense of, fine, one is a inflation hedge protection, but the aspect of looking at it from an investable vehicle, and again, it's all about time frame, but you have a lot of options out there to invest your money in to make money rather than just protect it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's possible to make money in gold and silver bullion by trading it and timing the market, you know, going in and out when you think the overall price of gold and silver are going to do dramatic things. And money has been made doing that. But that's not the real purpose of those things. Those things are cash. And they're there to protect purchasing power. So if you're in gold and silver for the excitement of massive capital gains, most of the time you're going to be bored. There will be like 2 years out of every 10 or 20 when it's dramatic and exciting and you make a lot of money and you feel like a genius. But that's not how those things normally work. Now, in the precious metal space, if you want that kind of action, you got the mining stocks, which are extremely volatile. And so if you educate yourself about mining fundamentals and put together a portfolio of really high quality mining stocks, then you get your tech stock action. You know, you get something that will move comparably to Google and Amazon and maybe to the cryptocurrencies, which are basically tech stocks right now. And that's very doable. You know, look at, for instance, what Rick Rule does for a living. He's Sprott Asset Management's something now. I forget, he changed his title, but he's one of their main guys. And he is a billionaire because he picked the right junior miners and bet big on them. And he even says, you don't even have to do that to make a lot of money in gold mining stocks. You just buy the best quality names, the biggest, best, and they will make you a lot of money in a gold and silver bull market. So, you know, we could be heading into a time with inflation picking up and everything when gold and silver perform pretty well. Let's say gold goes from here to 3,000 US, which would be a little more than a 50% move, which is totally consistent with the tail end of bull markets for precious metals. And that takes the mining stocks up by 3 to 5 times. You know, they go up in a much more dramatic way than precious metals do. Well, if you've got the high quality ones, you will tend to make very serious money during that stretch. And that should be exciting enough for any investor. You know, if you need more than a five bagger to wake you up in the morning, then you have other issues that aren't related to the financial markets that you should probably deal with. But, you know, five, and then with the juniors, 10 baggers are very common. So if you want to take some more risk and you buy a junior miner that that goes up by 10 times, that's a very doable thing in precious metals bull markets with the mining industry. So, you know, you can basically have anything that fits your temperament in the precious metal space, the safest thing in the world, which is gold, or the most aggressive thing in the world, which is an exploration company that has just found some new exciting deposit. You know, that's all there in precious metals. You just have to figure out who you are and what kind of risk you can tolerate and what kind of excitement you crave. And then you can, you know, put something together that's a portfolio of precious metals related things that give you what you need.
Yeah, John, I think that's an important balance between the people that are stacking silver or stacking gold, meaning they're planning to stack it and probably pass it on generationally to their children or grandchildren, and the people that are investing in mining stocks looking to get that speculative edge, similar to hot money chasing biotech or cryptos, or, you know, or recently the vaccine stocks or EV stocks and Tesla, you know. So there's a big difference, I think, in people that are speculating to make, you know, big gains, multi-bagger gains. That's a different animal. And it usually means they're going further down the food chain in the juniors too, and not with the largest producers to try to gain that, or not with the royalty companies, not like a Franco-Nevada. They're going into the junior market, which we have a lot of people that follow the show and listen to that. What do you think about the underperformance, though, generally, of the gold mining, the more speculative side of the equation, compared to a lot of other asset classes? It really hasn't kept up with many of the other asset classes, the miners themselves. So what do you make of that environment, and what do you think changes it?
Well, I think that's the kind of thing that just happens once in a while. Asset classes fluctuate against each other over time, and they each eventually have their time in the sun. And with the miners right now, I'm not completely sure I understand why they're underperforming right now, because this should be an excellent time for instance, producing gold miners with gold at $1,800 an ounce are generating a lot of cash flow. You know, they're fundamentally in great shape, which makes them a minority in the stock market right now. There are very few companies are generating the kinds of results relative to past results that the most successful miners are doing right now in the gold space. And, you know, at the same time they're doing that, they're running out of reserves. They aren't replacing the reserves that they dig out of the ground, which means they're going to have to buy up a bunch of the juniors in order to replace the reserves, which means the juniors will be bid up at some point. So all of this is true. And the fact that the stocks haven't reflected that yet, I think it's just one of those things that happens. And then they'll over-reflect that at some point in the future, where they do much better than they ought to do based on fundamentals. And that's just how markets work, you know? So the people who make the most money long-term as investors are the ones who are attracted to underperforming industries. For instance, a Warren Buffett type, although he doesn't generally like precious metals, but if he was focused on this industry, he would probably like what he's seeing because of cash flow. And that's what Rick Rule does who, you know, he says, well, when something you like is down, that means they put it on sale. You should like that and you should buy more. And I think this is one of those times with the junior miners in particular, and, you know, across the board in the mining space, the gold mining space. And I think people will look back on this as, you know, instead of a bad time, as a good time to load up. So the people who are accumulating right now are probably the ones who will do best longer term when things turn around. But other than that, I don't have a good explanation for why this particular stretch is a kind of a boring one for the mining stocks. But I think one thing that can cure it, well, two, one is that precious metals themselves go up, which would totally cure the malaise in the mining sector. And the other is that these guys keep reporting good numbers. You know, if they keep reporting higher cash flow, or at least really solid cash flow, and they use that cash flow to raise dividends and pay off debt, and then start making acquisitions, then you have a really exciting market. You know, it's a slow burn, but eventually you get to the point where the numbers are just so compelling that really nobody can say no. And we're headed that way with gold. If it just sits at $1,800 an ounce, over the next few years, you'll get a mining industry that's extraordinarily healthy and attractive. And I think investors will take note sometime between now and then.
Sometime, right? We're just waiting for more money to flow in. I do just want to put out one word of caution that 10 baggers, while they do happen, that's a tough investment too, John. So I wouldn't be saying that 10 baggers are common. And especially when someone does ride a 10 bagger, probably be selling on the way up too. Because look, there can be some big gains made here. But I know too, some of the more disenchanted metals investors, there's also a lot of losses to happen too. So make sure you have a strategy. Make sure you understand why you're investing in the precious metals, because there's a lot of information out there that will bring you into the precious metals, but you need to figure out why you're doing it yourself. And hey, hopefully as precious metals investors, especially in the stocks, hopefully they start moving higher. But man, and man, it's been a rough grind down for this last year. John, thanks as always for your time, buddy. I'm posting a link to your website below this interview, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Chad. See ya.